You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and really pleased to have with me once again Michael Oliver. And you can go to check out Michael's work and to sign up for his newsletter at olivermsa.com, olivermsa.com. Thanks for joining me again, Michael.
Good to be back, Jay.
Always good to have you with me. And when we miss you, we go into some sort of withdrawal symptoms, I think, we hear from some of our listeners. But it's good to know you had a vacation, and I'm glad to hear that you're now all ready to fight the battles ahead.
Right.
Michael, you know, it's quite clear that gold bugs and gold share investors are getting quite nervous. For example, this past week, I received the following email that I'd like to just pass on to you from a person named Mark. The fellow's name is Marco. He says, "Mr. Taylor, I'm very concerned about gold and the miners. Even Gary Savage, who was one of the few to call the bottom in January 2016, I guess he doesn't realize you did the same thing. He says that even Gary Savage is concerned about this market. He is not anymore sure that we are in a gold bull market. Could you ask Michael Oliver if he really, and he capitalizes really and underscores it, if he really thinks that we are in a bull market in gold and the commodities in general? And he says, I have lost almost any hope after this too long sideways correction. This is not a bull market behavior. Best regards, Marco." So how would you respond to Marco?
Well, I got up at 5 o'clock in the morning this morning because in my dreams I was thinking about a price chart of gold, not momentum. Momentum's pretty clear to me. It's one, it's in a bull trend. Yes, it is, has been stuck, it's all gold miners and silver, in a lateral movement for the last year and a half. In the case of gold, it's been stronger because we've returned to the highs in January, back up into the above 1350, for example, whereas silver and gold miners did not do that. They more or less laid in the sideways zone about halfway off the highs of 2016, between the highs of 2016 and the lows of 2015, and just went to sleep. So there was no upside, no reward. Therefore, anybody who's long feels like, gee, what a waste, you know. They were not collapsing. They just wouldn't go up. Now, gold has actually had a good pullback, but I realized I created a $50 by three-block reversal point and figure chart. People familiar with that will know what that means. And what it says is you plot the upticks and the downticks, and I went all the way back to zero. It was back when the London Exchange was trading gold at $50. We took over in 1975. Gold reached 200. And we had a pullback, and then we went up, you know, et cetera. So I created the point and figure since 1970 to the present, 50 by 3. And when you stand back and look at it, it says, you know what? I wouldn't mind seeing downticks to 1,200, because if we downtick and touch 1,200, which is meaningless on price charts, especially on this chart, I would set up a double top at 1,350, three downticks, 1,300, 1,250, 1,200, right? Okay, on that chart. But it doesn't acknowledge the sell-off until and unless I get three downticks. We've spent 7 months of downside pressure in gold since the January high, and haven't been able to get three downticks on this simple chart, whereas over the last several years, since the low at 1050 back in 2015, we've had many such downtick columns, in fact, more than three ticks. Yet we've spent seven full months trying to get three downticks and can't get them so far. Right now, gold is 1224. It's $14 off the low of the month, and it's sideways for the last 3 weeks. My shorter-term stuff, weekly momentum, monthly momentum, as opposed to annual, which is outright positive, they've been negative since earlier in the year, but they're very close when we get into the next month, which starts tomorrow, to getting upturns that say, okay, that's enough of that. I'm coming up out of the hole. It wouldn't take a $10 rally and a weekly close to begin that process. So I see the panic. It's palpable. It's more panic now, I think, than there was in that sell-off in December 2016, mm-hmm. in which case gold dropped all the way from 1360 down to a low of 1120. Mm-hmm. There's more panic now in a move that's half as powerful as that one was.
Yeah.
And yet the panic is palpable. The commitment of traders in the futures is more short than it's ever been. I mean, it's an interesting world. So, yes, I'm still positive because annual momentum trend has not been negated. Yes, it has gone to sleep, but that doesn't negate the prior positive signal. And I still think it's highly likely gold will turn up out of here and reassert itself. I think it's waiting on one thing. My bias is this, and it's not the dollar. It's waiting on the S&P to get fractured one more time to create a greater conviction level on the part of smart money to move out of that asset category into commodities and gold. And mm-hmm. I think that the next breakage in the S&P will be an igniter, especially for the gold market.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, what are we? Aren't we getting close now, Michael, to one of the longest bull markets? So, I mean, maybe the one that ended in 2000 was slightly longer.
Yeah. But there were what we've gone through over the last year and a half is a lot of sideways action. But if you'll go back and look at the sideways action that occurred after gold went to $850 an ounce in 1980 and then dropped down into a low at about $300 in 1982, gold went sideways for a decade.
Right.
In a range of a few hundred dollars, okay?
Right.
Now, I don't think that's going to happen this time. I think there's too many other macro trend events that are underway. But you talk about sideways for a year and a half, 2 years, it doesn't compare 1982 through about 1990-something. So, and that was not a bear market. It was just a sideways market with ups and downs.
Okay, Michael, so what's the dollar looking like to you? Because I picked up an article from Barron's this weekend, and the author, Simon Constable, says, gold's tailspin is far from over, and he said, don't expect gold prices to recover anytime soon because the strength of the U.S. dollar will keep a lid on any rally at the very least and could push prices for the metal down further. Of course, this is an establishment newspaper. I don't expect anything else, but what about the dollar?
Our assessment of the dollar, we went bearish as it broke 99, dollar index I'm speaking of. It collapsed to about 88.5. Then it has since rallied back over 95. It did that in May, it did it in June, and it did it in July. Every time it gets over 95, somebody whacks it, and it comes back down to around 94. It's where we are now. So the question is, was it a real turn in the dollar or a counter-trend rally? We label it as a counter-trend rally against the annual momentum downtrend that commenced in May of last year. Mm-hmm. And we think it's merely a rally in a bearish long-term downtrend. And so far, it's behaving like it because it has spun its wheels for three solid months now. Between 94.95, it is not going anywhere for the last 90 days. So people are talking about the dollar bull. Well, I haven't seen it in 90 days.
People short-term orientation.
Look at dailies or something, but it's just not got any potency to it, and I don't think it's going to. It's hard to be bearish on the dollar and therefore bullish on the euro when you think about fundamentals. I mean, how can you be bullish on the euro?
Right.
It's 57% of the dollar index. And I don't know. I can't explain that except to say you're measuring one fiat currency versus another. I could use another term describing what those money units are, but it would be rude. So it's hard to compare one nothing to another nothing.
Fundamentally
argue a case for either.
Yeah.
But anyway, technically, we argue the case that the dollar is a major bear and this is a counter-trend rally.
All right, so what's the T-bond? I think you're still very firmly bearish and think we started a long-term, perhaps mega-year bear market, right?
Yep, we started it in October 2016 as T-bond futures sank down through 166. They're right now laboring in the low 140s. They've had a couple good counter-trend rallies, and I still think we're in one, which is an extremely anemic one. It's a time waster on the upside, or sideways is a better description. I suspect the T-bonds have a little bit more rally in them, meaning a little drop in yields, and this applies to T-notes as well, the 10-year instrument. If the S&P cracks, another February-type event, which I see highly likely, and that would give the bonds that temporary flight to quality boost, which might get T-bond futures up to 147, 148, or something like that. Ultimately, I think the T-bond futures are going into the 120s. That converts to a yield on the 30-year of about 4.25%, which is quite a boost. Now, you know, that's not necessarily the end of it, but for the time being, that's the first major leg.
I think that would be quite a tectonic shift in the markets, no doubt about that. Well, one more thing, Michael, with just a couple of minutes left. You know, most of the time we have you on talking about gold and the markets and bonds and a couple of those major markets, but what people need to realize is that you cover a whole host of markets, and one of them that I'm very interested in is uranium. Of course, nobody's wants uranium these days. It's really almost the most out of fashion market I can think of, but it looked to me like there may be some hope for uranium in the not too distant future. In your charts,
I agree. We've been watching uranium for about a year, year and a half. There are futures, but the futures are highly illiquid, meaning the daily volume is zip, very little. But there's enough price data there from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange for us to plot and technically analyze the uranium contracts. And to us, it looks like a massive one, a collapse of price that's off the page. It's like a market commodities don't go to zero. That's the first rule of investing. It looks like uranium went to what might be called theoretical zero. And it's since turned up enough to where we have two layers on our annual momentum studies of uranium, one of which was already broken out a few months ago. And since then, the uranium's gone up about 10%, which is to say a couple bucks. It's that low.
That's incredible.
We're very close to breaking out over a multi-year momentum base on annual momentum. And the vehicles for participation, unfortunately, the futures, again, are illiquid. There is an ETF called URA, which is comprised of uranium-producing companies, the largest of which is Cameco, CCJ, which is about 25% of that ETF, I think. Or there's CCJ itself, Cameco, which is the largest uranium producer in the world. Uranium prices are below cost of production, but I understand that this year demand is now outstripped supply for the first time in many years. The Japanese nuclear meltdown thing. This is the first year we've actually had demand outpace supply. But technically speaking, we think it's a zeroed-out market that has nothing to do but go up.
And very interesting.
When you get the theoretical zero, it doesn't take a lot to have a 50% and a doubling in price.
Good point. I don't know what that does for the shares if they're still producing.
Well, it should help them a lot because they're under cost of production too, so they should benefit greatly.
Well, obviously, there's a lot of the world's energy still comes from nuclear power, so the idea that uranium could go to zero, of course, is a non-starter.
Yeah.
Mike, I want to thank you very much for being with us again, and I hope we can have you back next week or whenever can. We're going to grab you. Our people really miss you when you're not with us. Thank you so much. Well,
bye-bye.
Folks, don't go away. John Rubino will be with me. We're going to talk about the logic behind illogic behind Trump's tariffs. We'll let John give his opinions on that and various other items related to that. So don't go away. We'll be right back with John Rubino.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Noble Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Karratha region of Western Australia, where they are currently drilling and trenching their Perdes Reward Project. In addition, Novo has partnered with Sumitomo Mining Corporation to advance its Beaton's Creek Gold Project toward production. With over $70 million in cash and strong shareholder support from the likes of Kirkland Lake Gold, Novo is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.